If you're an only child, you're probably selfish, lonely, and spoiled. If you chose to have an only child, you're cruel and selfish for not giving your child siblings. These stereotypes about only children have existed for decades, and not just here in the U.S. They're prevalent in developed countries around the world. Lauren Sandler is herself an only child, and she's the mother of an only child. She's also the author of the book, The Freedom of Having Only One Child and the Joy of Being One. In writing the book, she discovered a huge body of research on only children, which largely refutes all of those stereotypes I just mentioned. I asked Lauren Sandler whether all of that data on only children has any impact on whether people decide to have one child or more.
You know, every person has different concerns, and every family is its own idiom. Their data can be really interesting to look at and certainly reassuring, but the data isn't an answer for people. You know, people make fertility choices with their hearts. It's the most personal choice you can make. I did find some common reasons why people who were ambivalent about having a second kid felt like it was something they really needed to do. And one of the most common things that I heard, which I really relate to on a visceral level, is that people have a real anxiety about what it means to saddle their one kid with their elder care as they become aged, and what it means to leave their one kid alone when they die. I also have talked to plenty of only children, and this is something I really relate to, who spend a lot of time thinking about their parents dying. The data out there tells us that elder care tends to be done by the closest residing sibling or the oldest daughter, no matter how big a family might be. So this is a perfect example of how the data should really reassure us, but there's something about the lived experience that the data doesn't quite speak to. There really is sort of an existential hole in this question, what I call sort of the Greek tragedy of the single child family, that yes, your parents die, and hopefully you will have a wonderful support network of people to help you through it, but in some ways you will be alone.
Wow, I hadn't actually thought about that, but that's, I mean...
I think about it all the time.
Of course.
And so many of my only children friends and I just sit around and talk about our parents dying. I know, it sounds really maudlin and tragic, but it really is one of those things that comes up a lot. But, you know, I am 38 and my parents are in their late 60s, and, you know, that is something that we discuss very openly. I have incredibly pragmatic parents, and their feeling is, yes, you have a great husband, you have great friends, we know what it's like to deal with end-of-life issues. We're going to have long-term health insurance. You're not going to have to worry about our nursing care. You know that we love you. And I always want to say, I know that's great, but still, can we talk about how it's hard? Because it is. It's hard to think about. But because I think it's something that I know I can handle, I know my kid can handle it too. And I do think that this is part of this whole question is, you know your child. You know if your child is lonely. You know if your child is unhappy. You know if your child is thriving and if your family dynamic works. This is part of why I want people to just say shush to all of the social voices in their heads that are saying you're selfish or you're a bad person if you don't give that gift of a sibling. Because honestly, if you know your kid's okay, just own that. And I know that my kid is okay. I never intended to write a book about motherhood once I got pregnant. You know, I tended to write about war and religion and cultural politics and policy issues. And it was only once I started confronting this issue that I realized, oh, this is really a gateway into a whole other conversation about those topics. So for me, you know, the first half of the book is about who only children really are, but that's almost an excuse to get to the second half of the book, which is much more about policy and economics and the reality of parenting in America.
What did you learn about family policy in the United States by doing research about only children? What did you learn?
Well, our family policy ranks third or fourth in the entire world as worst family policy. I think the only two countries that have worse family policy than we do are Liberia and Suriname. I believe we are equal to Swaziland. So this is not just a thing where we get to say, oh, well, yeah, we're not Scandinavia, but we make do. No. Like, we're not even Nigeria, but we make do. And this is part of the issue to me, is the rest of the world has figured out parenthood and modernity. The way that we've been doing it is unreconcilable. And there's a reason that more and more people are saying, I am not having a kid. I am not opting into the insanity of parenting and managing a work life and managing a life outside of those two things. It is not worth it. Part of that is cultural. Part of that is because we are working more hours than ever and parenting more hours than ever. And in the United States, we do both of those more than anywhere else in the world. In fact, mothers parent more hours than they did when we were stay-at-home mothers in the U.S. At the same time, we do it without paid parental leave. We do it without state-sponsored daycare. We do it without decent college education that we don't have to pay for. I mean, ours is the country that tells you that you need to love it the most, do it the most, and get the least amount of support for it. So here we are talking about all of these issues around motherhood, you know, talking about whether we lean in, whether we can have it all, whether we should buy cloth diapers or disposable ones, which organic food is best. But we're never talking about the structural barriers to achieving what the rest of the world has figured out is already pretty difficult without help. And to me, in light of our lack of decent policy, I feel like the best shot that I've got to have the life that I want is to be a mother and to do it once. That said, you go to Europe and have these conversations with people, they're also making a lot of the same choices because, you know, I mean, state-sponsored childcare isn't going to help when my kid wakes up at 5:45 in the morning. It's not going to pay for a babysitter when I want to go to the movies. You know, it's still a lot to deal with, but what we have to deal with in this country is so far beyond what anyone else is dealing with that it really does blow my mind that there is not outrage about this and that there is not an organized movement about this right now. There isn't even a major cultural conversation. And I am really hoping that the conversation that we are having about this issue about work-life balance, which is always just work-parenting balance in the conversation, that will open up to include a conversation about better family policy and also fertility choices. Because this is how we are voting right now, is with our bodies more than our organizing tactics. We are choosing to have fewer and fewer children. And hopefully someone will start paying attention.
That was Lauren Sandler. I spoke with her about her new book, The Freedom of Having Only One Child and the Joy of Being One. You can find a link to some of her work, that book, and the audio for that interview at our website, kuow.org. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Jeannie Yandel in for Ross Reynolds.